You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everyone. As always, we have a great show for you today. This is the place where you can learn about getting your life a little better, work out some of your own issues, have a little self-insight, get relationship help, and more and more and more. So you've got to stay tuned today because another wonderful author, guest, expert will be helping you out, folks. And as always, I encourage you to call if you have questions or comments here. 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. Right here in Los Angeles, we'd love to hear you. Or if you're one of those shy people, you don't want to get your voice on the air, you can email me instantly and ask me a question because it's a lot easier that way for you, right? And the email address is docdocmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. That's docmichelle at AOL.com. I would love to hear from you guys. You know, most of us have had setbacks in our lives, which really literally knock us down for a while until we get back up again. And sometimes after facing adversity a little too many times in our life, we carry fear. And, you know, life seems to be really heavy, more and more difficult for us. How can we become more resilient, whether suffering from unemployment, weight gain, addiction, pain, sickness, depression? Well, my special guest today is Dr. Alex Lickerman, and he says there are ways to become more resilient. Today we're going to find out how to do that, and we're going to be talking about his new book entitled The Undefeated Mind on the Science of Constructing an Indestructible Self. Wow. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, it is now. Dr. Lickerman, by the way, is a physician, current assistant vice president for student health and counseling services at the University of Chicago. And you can also read his Happiness in This World. It's a syndicated blog on the Psychology Today website. Hundreds of thousands of hits a month. This man knows his stuff. So welcome so much to the show, Dr. Lickerman. It's great having you here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Read your book, enjoyed it, a lot of enlightenment, and you know what? I'm using it for help with my clients.
Oh, that's great.
No, it really is. Tell me what inspired you to write this. Maybe you can share some of your own personal insights that you experienced.
It was really my patients that inspired me to write this book. I've spent the last 20 years or so taking care of people with everything from sniffles to cancer. And
wow.
What I've noticed most commonly is how two people with the exact same disease can experience that disease in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And one patient with breast cancer is just utterly destroyed by the diagnosis and by the experience of having to go through chemotherapy or surgery. And another patient who has the exact same diagnosis handles it with aplomb and apparent fearlessness, or at least courage, and the experiences are very different. And I think there is a prejudice that people have, or an unspoken belief that you're either born that way strong or not. But that's really not true.
Right.
There turns out to be a tremendous amount of recent research suggesting that though there may be a genetic set point of a range of resilience we can exhibit in instances like that, there are very specific things we can all do to make ourselves operate at the high end of that range.
Right. And even if folks have a propensity towards, let's say, depression that they may have inherited in their family, or a more severe, say, like Axis 1, like a gosh, like a bipolar or something like that. Mm-hmm. You're still saying they can push through. They can push through with some of the suggestions and help that you give in your book, The Undefeated Mind.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to oversell it as a miracle cure, but even anyone who has, you know, even diagnoses like you mentioned, like depression or bipolar disorder, can be helped. They wherever they happen to be, they can then become more resilient and do very specific things to help themselves that really will work.
That is so positive, and it's great news too to help a lot of people who think they're stuck in a rut and they can't get out.
Yeah, that people. I find people very commonly have that feeling of being stuck or being blocked.
Sure.
And so how do you get past that? That's sort of why I wrote the book, to help people, give them real tools they can use.
That's neat. Dr. Lickerman, what are some of the reasons happiness is so difficult to achieve?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that a lot of people think about happiness as bringing to themselves the right external things, so the right job, the right spouse, enough money, and assembling into their lives all these things that will sustain their happiness. And there's two problems with that approach, which is, unfortunately, I think the approach that most people take. And the first one is that all of those things can be taken from us and often are taken from us.
Right.
And having those things does not prepare us to withstand adversity when unforeseen, unpredictable, difficult things happen, like a terrible illness, or you get fired, or you lose a spouse or a loved one. Just having accumulated all those good things in your life does not prepare you to get through those difficult times. And so if you don't do two things, if you don't actually aim at feeling joy, but also prepare yourself to endure suffering, it's pretty hard to have a happy life.
Boy, is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the other reason I think that people have a hard time achieving happiness is that what they think will make them happy is often not at all what makes them happy.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, this is, you know, not new information to many people, but we all pursue external things thinking they will make us happy and discover that once we get them, we're not nearly as happy as we thought we were. And even if we are, that tends to be just momentary. And then we tend to habituate to those things and then become, you know, back to the same level of set point of happiness that we had before.
Yeah, exactly. Something, you know, I do tell clients, and I know you do too with your patients, is, you know, how can I find happiness? How can I get to what I need? How can I? And I encourage, you know, out there are support systems, right? There are medical doctors such as yourself. There are, you know, psychologists like myself, and there are groups and friends and family members who are supportive. However, the true, for me, and I know you agree with this, I think the true, you know, understanding of how to get through things lies within.
It does. It does. And the support is important. And there are times when people are distressed enough that they need professional help. But most of the time, most people don't.
Yeah.
But they do need to know what to do. And there are a lot of ways to go wrong. And not everything you try is going to work as well as you would like. And so it helps to have principles or guideposts you can turn to that you can even practice that really do help. And I know you, in your work as a therapist, I'm sure you spend a lot of time with cognitive interventions and reframing thinking and all types of techniques that really are proven to work.
You nailed it. They do. You know, they have been proven to work, a lot of them. And but, you know, what I found is if we as individuals don't believe it, you know, we can say affirmations, you know, for 100 years, but if we're not embracing them and believing them, it ain't going to work, basically.
Well, that's the key. That's the key. And that's why, you know, you can read all the self-help books you want.
Right.
But until that knowledge goes from intellectual knowledge to wisdom, meaning real belief within an individual person, it's not helpful. And so that's why self-help books continue to be written, because they're trying to, you know, one book may speak to a person in a way other books do not. And if a person can really get the message, like, why does an alcoholic suddenly understand one day that, hey, I can't drink, you know, alcohol is poison to me, and other alcoholics around them continue on drinking in denial. What is that process that takes that intellectual understanding and translates it into real wisdom? It's really mysterious.
Yes, it is.
There are some things that help, but we don't really know the answer yet.
Right. Where's that? Is it like your higher self within you that finally comes calling, or is it the survival of the being? What do you think that's about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think in Buddhism especially, there's this division of the self into the higher self, or the larger self and the smaller self. And that the idea is that we all have the potential to be a larger self, meaning wise and compassionate and strong. It exists as a potential within us that we need to cultivate.
Yes.
And we need to actually bring out. And the way, and this is, again, not news, but
yeah,
the way you do that is by facing adversity and springboarding from it into a stronger self. Because getting back to your original question, you know, why is happiness so difficult to achieve? Well, if we're not, if we're continually relying on outside attachments for our happiness, those can be taken away from us, so our happiness can be taken away from us. But if we have developed an inner strength that is so great that we then are positioned to enjoy our attachments but are not dependent on them for our happiness, then it's a subtle difference but a critical one.
Yeah, that's so true. We had a little break there with our music sponsor, but sorry, we're getting back to it. That was a little nice. A little early, guys, but we'll talk about that in a minute. No, it's really true. And, you know, I think the tendency is to, and it's our survival mechanisms too, Dr. Lickerman, the tendency is to shove down, shove down, shove down. You know what I'm saying? And that's called survival. And, you know, wherever that subconscious may lie, we continue to shove things down. And like you said, reach for the exterior. Reach for the exterior.
Well, mm-hmm. Because sometimes we can get away with shoving things down, right?
Yes,
it's an expedient means by which we can deal with immediate pain,
right?
But it has a long-term cost.
Boy, does
it. And that's a strategy I talk about in the book in the concept of accepting
pain. This is Dr. Michelle,
and
I'm proud to welcome my...
Not yet, guys. They keep coming in.
Leaping in.
That's me. Exactly. By the way, if you just tuned in here to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest is Dr. Alex Lickerman. He has a book out. It's called The Undefeated Mind, On the Science of Constructing an Indestructible Self. It's a really good book. It'll help you out working through some of your issues, how to become more resilient to issues that you perceive as seriously knocking you down in your life. And it is really a good book. Dr. Lickerman is not only a physician, but, you know, he's very well known in his field. And this is a great tool for you. It's a great, as we call it, self-help book, but it goes beyond that. There's a lot of research involved as well. So let's talk about what it possesses. What does it possess to, what do we need to have an undefeated mind, Dr. Lickerman?
An undefeated mind is my term for what psychologists like yourself call personality hardiness,
right,
or resilience. So resilience to me is a coin that has two sides. On the one side, it means that when adversity strikes,
right,
you are able not just to survive that adversity,
yes,
but even thrive, ultimately thrive. And
sure,
so it's either that you go through that adversity sort of with an even level of with equanimity and able to handle it and being calm, or if you become discouraged or depressed or anxious, that eventually you mm-hmm. come back to your baseline, that you recover from that.
Uh-huh.
That's a resilient type of personality. But the flip side of the coin is that it also involves when obstacles arise.
Right.
On the way towards goal achievement, you have a great goal and you're striving towards it, and then things get in your way, as they always do.
Sure.
It's hard not to become discouraged by those obstacles when you don't know how to overcome them. And an undefeated mind recognizes that even when he or she does not know how to overcome them, that they can be overcome. And the key is not allowing yourself to give in to discouragement. It doesn't mean not getting discouraged.
Right.
It means not giving in to your discouragement, but continuing on until you can succeed in overcoming that obstacle.
Boy, is that true. Sometimes people have a hard time, and I know you've seen this in many of your patients, you know, getting going. It's like as if they need a daily cheerleader nagging them. Get up, get going, keep going. I know you've been fired. I know that someone in your family has, been bothering you for money. There's a loss somewhere in your life. Keep going. How can these people keep doing this?
Yeah. You know, I think we all make a very similar mistake, which is that in the first moment something bad happens to us, we slap a judgment on it immediately, thinking that we can see the full, all consequences from that event, you know, into the future, and that those consequences are fixed in place, locked, and we can do nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're fired that is unequivocally bad, and we're never going to recover from that, and what are we going to do?
Yeah.
We quickly go to the negative place because, you know, loss is very painful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But interestingly, you know, when you look at what happens to people when they go through those things, life continues whether you want it to or not
yes,
most of the time.
Yeah.
And ultimately, people find a way to get through it, even when they don't immediately know how to solve the problem. Which is really the key, because, of course, if something terrible happens to you, and like you lose your job, but say you were contemplating going into your own business anyway,
mm-hmm.
suddenly that job loss isn't an obstacle, it's an opportunity.
Yes.
But that's only because you have a plan B in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And when people don't have that plan B, they only see the obstacle.
Yes.
And they lose confidence in their ability to solve problems that they don't necessarily know how to solve.
Right.
We rely too much on mm-hmm. our own vision about right. what is possible and not possible, and therefore make these snap judgments that then often send us into a terrible spinning depression or at least discouragement.
Boy, is that true. We so much need control. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's this whole thing, I've got to control, I've got to know the future, I've got to know what's going on. I think one of the most helpful ideas that I received from one of my close associates who's heavily into Zen says just allow and learn. Allow. And learn from what's going down. Yes, you can feel the pain. Yes, you can, you know, observe it and see it and things happen like this, but allow it to unfold and then get up and take action to move on, you know.
Right.
So
right.
It sounds simple, though, right?
Exactly. It sounds simple, and everyone listening, I'm sure, agrees it makes sense. But the question is, how do you actually do it?
Yes.
And that's again, what I try to write about.
Yes, great. And by the way, we're talking to Alex Lickerman. He's a medical doctor. He's the author of his latest book, The Undefeated Mind, on the science of constructing an indestructible self, how to become more resilient, and basically a happier person. If you would like to call in here live on the air, you can do so at 323-203-0815 if you have a question for my guest, Dr. Lickerman. Or, of course, you can email me if you'd like to be more discreet. You're too shy to get your voice on the air. That's fine. You can email me instantly here, and I will ask the good doctor the questions at docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com, docmichelle@AOL.com. So you say that wisdom can help with managing suffering. Is that basically what you were just talking about in terms of gaining more wisdom to get through your suffering?
Yeah. In Buddhism, the key to strength is thought to be wisdom.
Mm.
And I can, you know, give you an example of a patient of mine, and I tell the story in the book. A young guy who came to me complaining of a lump in his neck that ended up being a lymphoma.
Yes.
And, you know, when I sent him for a biopsy,
yeah.
He came back to me enraged.
Yes.
Because he hadn't, his expectations for the way the visit would go and how the biopsy would go were not actually happened. So
he
projected that anger onto me. And he came, you know, he sort of was ranting at me on the phone about this. And I had him come in to actually give him the diagnosis, at which point he sort of got very quiet and turned to his girlfriend, who he brought with him, and said, well, we can do this, right? And her answer was, well, if we can do this together, if you get help for all your anger management problem.
Whoa.
And because he was clearly, you know,
yes.
So what ended up happening was because he was so in need of her support, because mm-hmm. now he's confronted with lymphoma, that's what opened his heart to hearing from mm-hmm. her that he had an anger problem. And
wow.
So he got help for it.
Yes.
And actually became less angry over time, and ultimately came back and told me that he considered lymphoma, which had been the worst possible thing he could have ever imagined happening
yes.
to him, to actually be the best thing.
My God.
Because,
yes.
number one, he was cured.
Yes.
But number two, because that's yes. what helped him to acquire the wisdom, meaning to manage his anger so that he could keep his girlfriend, which was sort of what, you know, gave him great pleasure in life. And if he had lost her but sort of had his life saved, he sort of asked me, well, what's the point?
Wow. Great story. And, you know, it really does. Sometimes it takes the worst of situations to really enlighten us about the most important things in life and stop the negative habits, you know, in order to function. And I'm glad about that outcome for him. That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's difficult, of course, when you're going through those things to believe
mm-hmm.
that there could be a beneficial outcome. But invariably, if you get through them, even when the outcome isn't what you want it to be, there are benefits to be gained.
Sure. Why is finding our mission in life so important to our happiness?
Mm. So there's this theory called the set point theory of happiness, which says that how happy we are in life is pretty stable and pretty constant and determined by mostly our genetics and early childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of data to support that idea. But recent studies have suggested that we actually can over time change our set point, but it's not by doing all the things that people tend to believe they need to do, not by getting more money or having a good job or acquiring things, but it turns out actually by making a commitment to altruistic acts. And so if you really want to become a happier person so you can enjoy your life more over time, the key to doing that really seems to be through altruism, and which I equate, in a sense, to a personal mission. You know, what do you mean by a personal mission? It's sort of a statement you articulate to yourself that defines the kind of contribution you want to make with your life. You know, we are meaning-seeking and meaning-creating creatures. That's just how we are built. And we can leverage that to actually, you know, the more we contribute to society, to people in our lives, even to strangers, the happier we tend to be. Not only that, but when you connect that articulated mission statement, if you will, to your daily activities, and when you come up against obstacles, you know, that are in your way, that bar your way towards achieving the goals you want to achieve, if the ultimate reason you're trying to achieve those goals in the first place is because it connects to your sense of purpose for your life, when you get discouraged and want to quit, that mission statement will be lying there waiting for you to turn to to keep you going.
Boy, is that important. On a daily basis, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I have a lot of clients, and I'm sure you do too, who say, you know, something like, I'm worthless. You know, I'm you know, I'm middle-aged now, and I'm worthless. I'm a failure. I didn't go to finish college. I didn't achieve the goals that I wanted to. I've been an alcoholic, and I have major depression, and I've been knocked down all my life. How can I get back up on my feet? And again, you know, it is about the altruism, making that mission statement about what you want to set out to achieve. And it doesn't have to be a huge, you know, I'm going to be a medical doctor and work. I mean, it can be, but even on the smallest level, you know, somehow every day when you look at people, when you're out there in the world, every moment that you can give a kindness or give something to the homeless person that you might have, whatever, you might have an apple in your bag, or, you know, or volunteer at the shelter, volunteer at the homeless shelter this Thanksgiving, whatever it is, put yourself out there and give love to some other folks.
And, even if it's a common mission, if it's, say, to raise a healthy, happy family, you know, it doesn't matter. If it's, you know, our self-esteem is often largely dependent on the value we ultimately create for others. We like ourselves more when we think we are creating, helping people. And so if you are someone very much down on yourself and have low self-esteem for whatever historical reason, this is a way in to a higher self-esteem. It's not necessarily perfect, not necessarily guaranteed, but it's a great technique to use.
Wow, is that true? If you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me and my special guest today, Dr. Alex Lickerman. We're talking about his latest book. It's The Undefeated Mind, and it's really about the science of constructing an indestructible self. It is a self-help book, as we're calling it, but a very different, easy read, by the way, and understandable, but a very good book, which will help you out. If you'd like to ask a question here to my guest, 323-203-0815 is the live number, or you can email me here at docmichelle@aol.com. I have two L's, docmichelle@aol.com. And we're talking about, you know, expecting obstacles along our way. Well, that's what life's about. I mean, it's almost like, bring it. Come on, let's see what the next challenge is going to be. That's what our, you know, human experience is all about. How can we overcome not being so bogged down by many things in our lives? We continually are hit and hit again. You say, the very thing that is required for victory. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, obstacles often are in themselves what we need in order to succeed, because they force us to grow a lot of times. And sometimes we can't achieve the goals we want unless we ourselves change. So we don't like obstacles. We don't want to experience them when we're trying to. We want things to be easy. But life is not easy. And the more energy we try and expend towards making our lives easy, the less successful we're going to be, the less happy we're going to be. If instead we embrace the notion that life is hard and that achieving anything worthwhile is hard, that expectation fuels our ability to accomplish those things.
Is it ever. And just like you discussed the young man who came to you with the tumor And, you know, he had a wake-up call, and he realized, you know, there were also other gains that he had by, you know, having to deal with this. And he apparently kept his girlfriend and had a very positive prognosis. Everything turned out fine for him. You know, I think it's fascinating that you are a very long-time practicer of, it's Nichiren Buddhism. Did I say that right?
Right. Fine. Nichiren Buddhism, yes.
Nichiren. Thank you. I always sort of am off on that. And it is a great practice, and I see a lot of healing within people who do practice that. Something that goes along with that sometimes with the people connect Buddhism with the karma, the concept of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hear all the time, I must have bad karma.
Right.
You know, how do you fit that into your schema? I mean, how do you define karma? What
it's a complex issue. But for me, karma comes down to actually your character.
Ah.
So when people say, I have bad karma, they sort of are implying that there's this external force that has predetermined that they're going to have a bad experience or a bad outcome. As if what they do and the volition they bring to issues, it has nothing to do with it.
Right.
But really, it's a way of saying what happens to you as a result of what you are and who
mm-hmm.
you are. So very simply, if somebody yells at you and swears at you and your response is to swing your fist and punch them in the face, the result of that really was, you could argue that what the person said, but mm-hmm. it's much more what's inside of you that determined how you reacted. Because one person might swing a fist and punch that person back in the face. Another person might laugh it off and walk away.
Right.
And it's that person's character,
mm-hmm.
and which is really based on the beliefs they have. Maybe one person feels very insecure, and when is insulted by someone, needs to lashes out in anger.
Right.
Another person recognizes that anyone who would attack them verbally must be very unhappy and feels actually compassion for them, and maybe in fact befriends that person. And so the outcomes, what actually, you know, the things that happen to us, our karma, is really determined by our character.
Wow, is that true? You know, in your book, The Undefeated Mind, it is the science of constructing an indestructible self. And there are certain characteristics and certain suggestions that you give and also how to achieve those things. You say we should stand alone and avoid authority. Who in your definition is authority, and what do you mean by that?
To me, authority is anyone who we feel has authority over us, whose opinions unduly influence us because of what we perceive to be their position over us. So it could be our boss, our parents, or it could be even a strong-willed friend. But the idea of standing alone, it's a very Buddhistic idea.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, but it's really supported by a lot of research, which basically says the more responsible, or I should say, the more responsibility you personally accept for achieving a goal, the more likely you are to accomplish that goal. It's
mm-hmm.
very easy to outsource our efforts to people around us who are supporting us
mm-hmm.
and not take action ourselves.
Right.
But when you take full responsibility for even an outcome that you don't seem necessarily to be able to influence, but when you make that determination that you will be responsible, suddenly that activates you in a way that enables you to often make the impossible, the seemingly impossible, possible.
Yeah.
There's just something about taking full responsibility that activates us in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell a number of stories in the book about that. But the issue with authority, it talks also about that a recent study actually showed something fascinating, which is that when people make moral decisions, when they take a stand, it actually makes them stronger, physically stronger.
Yes.
Now, the reason it makes them physically stronger is not because their muscles suddenly actually become larger or literally stronger, but because their inner strength increases, their determination increases.
Yes.
And so the reason I argue to avoid authority when faced with moral dilemmas is because authority will rarely, in the real world, have the best interests of is interested in doing the right thing as we ourselves may be.
Yeah.
And so we can be, when we fall under the influence of others with regard to the moral choices we make, it's probable that we're more likely to make not the moral choice, but what we want, the choice we want to make, choice we're rationalizing. But when we take those moral stands, and by moral I mean working to alleviate suffering or bring joy in some way to some other person or group of other people, that actually makes us stronger.
Boy, is that true. Dr. Lugerman, we have a caller on the line. Shall we take this call? See what's
going
on? Sure. Hi. All right. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Lickerman. This is Dr. Michelle. Who's this?
This is Jack.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Great. Thanks for calling today.
Well, Well, thank you. I'd like to ask the doctor. I was in a very bad car accident a number of years ago, and I've been listening to the show, and I've got chronic pain, and I'm a good guy. I do the right thing. But I'm in chronic pain, and I'd like to know what his feeling is. How can I try to overcome this? How can I try to feel better?
Good question. Good question. Okay. Did you hear that, Dr. Lickerman? Uh-oh. Yep. Okay. I think what happened is that Dr. Lickerman did not get through on that particular call. So let's see if we can pull him up again. All right, so you're asking, here we go. Let's try to answer this. Hold on, let me see if I can take this call. All right. All righty, here we go. All right, there we are. Dr. Lickerman, you with us here?
Yeah, I am.
Great, thank you so much.
There.
Well, I think that's what happened here. On the. Yeah. Sometimes that goes on. All right. Jack was asking, he was saying that he was, I don't know if you heard his question.
I didn't.
Okay,
no.
He said he was he was the victim of a bad car accident, and he has,
yes,
as a result of that, chronic pain. Jack, are you on the air with us? Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I am.
Great.
I am.
He was listening to...
Hi, Jack. Hi, doctor.
He was listening to the conversation earlier, and so he's asking how he can overcome his chronic pain issues. He's always suffering every day, and he would try to do anything, apparently, to manage this. So,
yeah, mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
And also, karmically, why did I have to go through this? I went
so let me
through
take...
three spinal surgeries, and it's been very tough.
Right. So it sounds awful, and you're not alone. I mean, studies show that approximately 10% of the American population actually experiences enough chronic pain on a daily basis that interferes with their ability to function, and it's just really difficult and really awful. I'm sorry you're going through it. So let me take your second question first. You know, why did this happen to you? That's actually the wrong question to ask. There's very good studies looking at the meaning-seeking that people do after traumas like the one you went through, where they look for, it's called sense-making. You know, why did this happen? What's the ultimate cause of this? And the reason to avoid that is several-fold. One is, even when people ultimately settle on what they think is the correct reason, that doesn't stop them from continuing to look for more reasons. They keep ruminating about it. And people who do ruminate about this and don't find answers end up suffering much more depression and discouragement and anxiety than people who never bother to ask that question at all. It's unfathomable, you know, the reasons why you may have had to go through this. It's certainly nothing you have intentionally done. It's nothing you ever want to think about deserving. I don't think about karma that way. Much better, a much healthier way to seek meaning in an experience like this is something called benefit finding, where you're looking at it to figure out what can you do with this, as you're all obviously also trying to overcome it. So what can you do with this? And interestingly, I write about in my book a patient who's also experiencing chronic pain, somebody who has or had horrible chronic headaches. It's a very difficult thing to treat. I presume you're already seeing a pain physician who's working with you from
yes.
a medical perspective to try to control your pain.
Yes. Yes.
And that's not doing, not giving you the relief that you're looking for.
I mean, it helps. It gives me medication.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For pain management. Mm. But yeah. He's a very good doctor, and I trust him implicitly. So that's the silver lining of this.
Right.
But
right.
Still, every day I still deal with the pain in my lower spine. And you're talking about headaches. I do get headaches also. So it's quite a cross to bear sometimes.
It's really awful, and I have a number of patients like this who I struggle with as well. And, you know, from a physician perspective and a patient perspective, the first thing I always say to patients like this is I will not abandon you, but we will just keep trying to actually get you the physical pain relief that you need.
Right.
And you have to keep, you know, a lot of times, as you undoubtedly know, it's trial and error. There is something else, though, that you might try, and it's actually what I suggested to my headache patient who ended up doing really quite well with it, and it's something called acceptance and commitment therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I haven't.
So the idea is that the idea, when you feel pain, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain, we spend most of our time trying to get away from it. And by that, it ends up, in order to avoid physical pain, we often stop ourselves from doing things that cause it. So if walking causes you physical pain, or if working causes you physical pain, we end up stopping doing those things. And so the pain wins twice. One, we're feeling this horrible pain, and two, we're allowing it to stop our lives in its tracks. And so while you're always wanting to chip away at the physical pain itself and trying to reduce it, the idea of accepting that you are going to be in pain, of almost but not quite embracing it, but really saying this is the way it is, practicing this, does two things. One is, interestingly, in studies it suggests that paradoxically it actually does help to reduce pain, or at least the experience of pain. But two, it also enables you to focus on the goals that you want to achieve that the pain is preventing you from achieving. So it may be my patient wasn't working. He couldn't work, and he wanted to work. And a therapist I sent him to suggested that he, you know, because it was chronic pain that didn't signify injury, that he work anyway. And, you know, there are therapists who practice this type of therapy, and for somebody like you who really has a very severe and significant pain syndrome, this wouldn't probably be something you want to do on your own, but have a professional guide you through it. But the idea is that you don't let the pain, even to whatever degree you can diminish it, yes, but you also don't let it stop your life.
That's really
correct.
True. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling, Jack. I hope Dr. Lickerman helped you out, and I want you to really consider picking up his book, The Undefeated Mind, because it really does clarify a lot of those concepts as well. So, all right.
Where can I get that? Where can I
get Amazon.com, also on Dr. Lickerman's website, which we'll give you. Go ahead. And
wonderful.
Yeah.
It's www.alexlickerman, right. All one word, .com. It's also in Barnes & Nobles, all around the country.
Yeah, there you go.
Very good.
Have a
Very
great
good.
Day, Jack.
Thank you so much.
Good thoughts to you on managing your pain and carrying through.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right. That was great. That was a very enlightening call. Yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you for answering that. Thank you for taking the time to help him out with that.
Very tough patients, tough problems.
Oh, I'll tell you, it really must be, you know. Speaking about obstacles and pain and problems like that, how can people find and maintain gratitude for obstacles when they seem to get in the way of our functioning and finding happiness every day?
Yeah. It seems kind of like an oxymoron that you would be grateful for an obstacle.
Oh, that's
I think what you need to do to become grateful for an obstacle is to develop the confidence that you can overcome it, and not just overcome it, but that from that obstacle, you will acquire some benefit that if the obstacle never entered your life, you would not be able to acquire. Uh-huh. And it's especially challenging to believe this when you don't, number one, know how to solve the problem you're confronted with, and have no idea what benefit you might get, and won't know until you solve it. And so not that I'm a believer in blind faith of any type, but it does require a little bit of that, that in solving a problem you're going to be actually able to achieve benefit you wouldn't have been able to achieve had you not had that problem in the first place. And my experience is that the best way to develop that confidence is by just doing it again and again and again. That, you know, looking back in your experience and realizing how many problems most people really have solved where at the first they encountered that problem, they didn't know how.
Yes. It's almost like exposure. You know, the exposure therapy we encourage folks to utilize when they have, you know, some kind of phobia or fear or social anxiety. Expose yourself to it. You finally learn that, no, indeed, you're not going to die and nothing horrible is going to happen. You just keep kind of doing it. And then, alas, you learn a lot of great things from it. And
you've achieved
a lot of what you needed to. If you just tuned in here to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, Dr. Alex Lickerman, we're talking about his latest book, The Undefeated Mind. It's on the science of constructing an indestructible self, how to become more resilient. And, you know, Dr. Lickerman, I think one of the biggest fears for all of us is the fear of the unknown, you know, the fear of death. And you encourage readers to muster their courage to try to face this fear. Can you share with us what was the awakening experience was that you had that helped you overcome your fear of death?
Sure. This was actually before I began practicing Buddhism. I was in college. I remember sitting at home one day during the summer, staring out my window, listening to the wind blow in the trees. And out of nowhere, there came this sudden lightning in my chest. It felt like a physical feeling. And I suddenly was just filled with this amazing sense of connection to everything and a sense of unity and sort of, I certainly wouldn't say an out-of-body experience, but a sense that I was connected to a greater whole in a way that normally walking around I did not feel. And what was astounding about that for me was that it was really literally the most joyful feeling I'd ever experienced, as well as characterized by an incredible sense of just goodwill.
Yes.
That I felt towards everything and everyone. And then in about 5 minutes, it completely faded away. That was
right.
It.
5 minutes is pretty good, though.
Yeah, actually, I felt that 5 minutes is pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't, you know, and I thought to myself, wow, if this life state, which was, you know, undeniably real, could be my base life state, my baseline life state, that would be me experiencing life, enjoying every moment, no matter what it was, whether it was a pain-filled moment or a joy-filled moment, I would enjoy it simply because I was alive. And in fact, that experience is largely why I got interested in practicing Buddhism, thinking that it would be a practice that would ultimately lead me back to that life state.
Right.
So I have to confess, it didn't actually cure me of my fear of death.
Okay.
But it has cured a lot of people of their fear of death. And I think for a lot of people, it's been a resultant belief that life in some way goes on after death. And and that didn't happen for me.
Yes.
But it certainly did make me feel that there is far more to know about this experience than we suspect in our day-to-day life.
Boy, is that true. And, you know, with the media coverage of the neurosurgeon who came out with his near-death experience book recently, of course, on the cover of Time magazine and all, I mean, a lot of people are, you know, I think finding hopefulness in that. Well, he's a medical doctor, and he had an out-of-body experience, and he saw the other side.
Right.
So he's saying there is a, you know, whatever that is about. What is your feeling about that? Do you think we, you know, our brains have a way of just sort of surviving, and therefore we conjure up certain images that will help us survive?
Yes.
You know, hopeful.
Yeah. I'm a skeptical scientist.
Okay.
So I think that there's actually been a lot of studies looking at the specific phenomena that people who go through near-death experiences report to figure out if there's some organic scientific correlate.
Oh.
And it turns out for most of them, if not all, there really is, including the sense of floating above your body.
Yes.
There really are what appear to be scientific explanations for just about all of that. There's even been studies where people have put writings on facing the ceiling so that if a disembodied person is actually floating above that ceiling, they should be able to read what was there, and none of them have been able to do that.
Uh-huh.
So while people really want to believe this, which of course biases them towards stories that support their belief and against stories that argue against their belief, from my perspective, there's nothing convincing to suggest that we are capable of existing outside of a physical brain.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fascinating study, and you know, who knows what happens, but I think you're right. A lot of the evidence has indicated that there are mechanisms within our survival or our consciousness that, you know, allows us to have that. It's almost like a hopefulness, or turns us into almost super beings when our brains are, you know, near death, which is, you know what? I say if that is what's happening, then so be it, and that's a good thing. You know, that's part of our survival, I guess. That's part of
Interestingly, it's a lot of mechanisms that are connected to survival actually get engaged at times like that. And, you know, it's interesting because people have these experiences all over the world, but how they interpret them varies tremendously depending upon the culture from which they come.
Right.
And so, and the images people get are actually quite different depending upon their culture, which again is suggesting this is more a neurologic phenomenon than an actual entrance into heaven.
Exactly. True. If you see some of those programs on the bio channel, you'll see, you know, people, it depends on their religion sometimes. I mean, some of the Jewish clients see Moses when they're out there. You know, the Christians will see Jesus and that kind of thing. So there, you know, there is a something interesting about that. So, by the way, folks, if you'd like to tune in, we have a few more minutes here, 323-203-0815. You can call live on the air or email me instantly at docmichelle@aol.com. And I'm talking with the author of his latest book. It's called The Undefeated Mind, Dr. Alex Lickerman. It's on the science of constructing an indestructible self. You know, it's keeping ourselves resilient to what's going on. What, Dr. Lichtman, really quickly, what do you think might be something, not wrong, but something that's a little bit missing from a lot of the self-help books that your book emphasizes that is not a real common, helpful idea?
Yeah. Well, first, I guess I really didn't actually set out to write a self-help book. It sort of turned into that. But the ideas that I present in the book and the practical suggestions I make are all very much based in science. And any recommendation I make is not just sort of my own experience working either with myself or with patients, but reflected in real studies that suggest they have some real merit. So that's
sure.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it turns out when you actually look at those studies, it kind of reverses a lot of the commonly accepted wisdom in a lot of self-help books.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the idea, gratitude, I think everyone knows
sure.
and understands that the more gratitude in your life, the happier you'll be. Well, it turns out gratitude also makes you stronger and
uh-huh.
makes you capable of withstanding more.
Yes.
But it also turns out that gratitude lists that a lot of books recommend
mm-hmm.
don't actually work that well for a lot of people. And what actually works better than making a list of things for which you are grateful is imagining how the things for which you should feel grateful might never have happened.
Hmm.
So in a sense, subtracting them from your life. And if you can imagine in a way that it really might not have happened, or imagine vividly how you might yet lose them. So, really the limit of our ability to create gratitude is our imaginations. That turns out to create a feeling of gratitude much more consistently than just writing gratitude lists, because we habituate to things that we
sure.
have in our lives. It's very hard to continue to feel grateful for them until we are threatened with their removal.
Boy, is that true.
So
mm-hmm.
a pragmatic way of approaching gratitude to make us stronger.
That is really great. That's a wonderful thing to point out. I think it's very true. Listen, we're nearing the end of the show. I'd like listeners to be able to get a hold of your book and learn more about you. How can they do that, Dr. Lichtman?
So as I said earlier, they can go to my website at www.alexlichtman.com. They can find the book on Amazon, the iBookstore, the Barnes & Noble website, and at bookstores all around.
Great. Well, listen, if all of our listeners just tuned in later or they want to listen to the program again, everything will be up here on the website for download and replay after tomorrow. All the shows are up on iTunes as well and the new TalkTube, app. So thank you so much for being here and sharing all your wealth of information with my listeners. I know a lot of folks got help today. So
thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Take good care.
You too.
All right, Dr. Lichtman. Bye-bye now. All right. Again, the book is called The Undefeated Mind, and Alex Lichtman, he's an MD, and it is a self-help book, but it goes beyond that, and it has practical suggestions for you on how you can help yourself move through things and, just feel better in your life, find more happiness, and that's the way it goes. As I always say here on LA Talk Radio at the end of On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, I want you to take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people as well, and that's usually the way it works. Also, if you have any questions or comments about the show, I always invite you to contact me here, and as you know, my email address is docmichelle, docmichelle at AOL.com. That's docmichelle@AOL.com. Thank you so much for joining me, everybody, today. It's been a pleasure. Take good care of yourselves. Next week, we're going to have another outstanding author. We're going to talk about the deepest acceptance, the radical awakening in our ordinary lives. Dr. Jeff Foster will be on. Take good care, bud. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.